Want to welcome you here this afternoon. Thanks for coming on such short notice. Just for what's going to happen for the next little while is you will hear first from Martha Ingram, who is the chairman of the Vanderbilt University Board of Trust, and then she will then introduce the eighth chancellor of Vanderbilt University. Once he is done with his
Michael said, I am Martha Ingram, and I have the distinct pleasure of serving as chairman of the Vanderbilt University Board of Trust. And I have the distinct pleasure of telling you that earlier this morning, the Board of Trust unanimously and enthusiastically elected Nicholas Zepos to be the eighth chancellor of Vanderbilt University. Let me tell you some of what I have just told the thousands of Vanderbilt student, faculty, staff, alumni, and friends around the world in an email message, because I think that this says it best. And I'm quoting what has gone out. Over his two decades as a scholar, teacher, and executive at Vanderbilt, Chancellor Zepos has contributed his talents in many different capacities as a law professor, a beloved and honored presence in the classroom, as provost and vice chancellor for academic affairs, as the university's chief development officer, responsible for leading the most successful campaign in Vanderbilt's history, and since last August as interim chancellor. He has seen Vanderbilt through important moments in our history and has led our evolution to a truly global university. Chancellor Zepos possesses a deep familiarity both with Vanderbilt's powerful strengths and with the areas where growth and change are essential. His keen strategic mind seeks always the greatest benefit for this university, as does his deep concern for students. As provost, Nick has overseen and guided the integration of development, student life, and academic strategy. His vision for faculty recruitment and his recognition of the critical importance of our graduate and professional schools and our great medical center have powered Vanderbilt's ascent to the highest levels among the ranks of the world's great universities. Nick has helped establish Vanderbilt as a renowned and respected research institution while nurturing the undergraduate experience as central to the vitality of campus life. He has a unique and graceful ability to work with every member of the extended Vanderbilt community, our students, faculty, staff, parents, and alumni. He has been instrumental in aligning all aspects of Vanderbilt's life so that the university operates as a true intellectual community with a great social heart and a commitment to the Nashville community in which he has lived for more than 20 years. And that's the end of what went out today. Now, as you know, because you have been watching it for almost 8 months, the search for our new chancellor was a rigorous and intensive process. And I want to thank especially the chairman of the search committee, Denny Barov, who is right here, and the members of the committee for their great work. Over the course of this search, we heard from thousands of people, had dozens of public meetings, and talked with a diverse pool of candidates and applicants. You will not be surprised to hear that this was the most desirable, sought-after position in higher education. So we had the opportunity to evaluate the most accomplished leaders of universities and other organizations. And yet, after all this, it became even clearer to us that the person who best embodied our aspirations and goals for this great university was the person who had already given so much to it already, Nick Zepos. Now let me tell you a little bit about Nick, who who happens to also be my friend. He is a distinguished legal scholar. He is an award-winning teacher. He is both a visionary and a pragmatist. He has a deep concern for students and for their education and their well-being. He has a commitment to Niceville and to making the university an active and enthusiastic partner in solving society's problems. He is a kind and caring person whose generosity of spirit infuses everything that he does. He is also a deeply ethical person whose guiding principle is, what's the right thing to do? He loves people and has a wonderful sense of humor, something, Nick, that you will probably need from time to time in this job. He's a pretty good golfer, probably, I don't know, maybe better than pretty good, but he is a good golfer, and I've played with him. He does not move his ball with his toe in the rough, which is always a good test. Anyhow, he's a great sports fan, and you'll find him in the locker rooms after the games or on the sports field. He had the wisdom, and this is really important, and the good sense to marry Lydia, and this may just be the most important thing that he has ever done. Lydia, you're wonderful. We know that selecting the chancellor is perhaps the single most important task of the Board of Trustees. And it has only happened, you know, of course, 7 times before in our 135 years since Vanderbilt's founding. It is an awesome responsibility, and I can proudly say that with Chancellor Zeppos, we now have an equally awesome leader. So now I'm really very pleased to introduce to you the 8th Chancellor of Vanderbilt, Nick Zeppos.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Ingram, and good afternoon, everyone. I come into this building, actually probably for the last 10 years, and I call it my office. And I walk in through that door, and sometimes I'll walk into one of these side doors. Sometimes I'll even sneak in the back door. But this day is like no other day in my time at Vanderbilt. I am so honored, I'm so humbled, and surprised to be standing here in this iconic building once known as Main Hall that once had 2 towers and made it through a terrible fire that is now called Kirkland Hall under the gaze of Bishop McTeer, who had the perspicacity to visit up north and run into a man by the name of Cornelius Vanderbilt. I see every day probably my most distinguished predecessor, James Hampton Kirkland. I often look at the nameplate and I say, did he live that long or did he serve as chancellor that long? He truly was a giant, and we stand on his shoulders and so many other shoulders. And I say to Vanderbilt, the Board of Trusts, Chairman Ingram, every member of the Vanderbilt community, which is worldwide, I very, very humbly accept your invitation to serve as the chancellor of this great university. Lydia and I did come here 21 years ago in a 1987 Volvo station wagon with an 8-month baby in the back and drove down Interstate 81 to Interstate 40. And my dream at that time was to move to Nashville and to be a teacher, a scholar, and to one day say, I'm a professor of law at Vanderbilt. It was the pinnacle of achievement for me, and I loved practicing law. But I always wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to be a professor. And when I came to Vanderbilt and looked at it, I said, this is a place we can be happy. This is a place we can grow. I never thought of being a dean. I never thought of being a provost. And I certainly never thought of being a chancellor. I thought of myself as the faculty member for life, teaching students, writing articles, spending time in archives, maybe wearing shorts on occasion during the summer. Somewhere along the line, my passion for learning, and I grew up, and I can tell you my favorite memories are sitting through the cold Wisconsin nights reading, usually encyclopedias. That tells you what a kind of nerd I was. But at some point, I discovered that my love and passion for learning, for discovery, for really these greatest of the American institutions, universities, really was a calling to me. And I thought, I can really make a contribution, and this is a spiritual calling for me to contribute to a university and a community that I called home. So I moved on the path to administration, and I found it fascinating. My love for Vanderbilt grew every day I came in. And I am very, very honored to be able to take this position on and to continue the great progress and trajectory of this incredible institution. Let me just recognize my faculty colleagues. I have a few of my colleagues here. The hardest thing for me is always to be an administrator when you're a professor, because it's really, we've crossed the line. But I always will consider myself a faculty member, a teacher at this great university. The faculty is both single and plural. I sometimes like to emphasize the single part, because that pure individualism, that thirst for discovery, I've got the idea, support me, I'm cutting against the grain. It is that singular purpose that drives them, that individualism, that iconoclastic personality, and I will say pain sometimes that faculty are, but they are the heart and soul of the university. You know, we have beautiful buildings, but who's teaching in them? Who's making the discoveries? Who's curing the patients? So I have to recognize my faculty as very, very talented individuals, but it's plural because they are the community of scholars. That we all come here as professors to say, I can make a difference, I can be better, I can learn more when I'm around people, yes, smarter than I am, who know things I don't know. So the faculty community here is an incredible one. I've always been supported and nurtured by it. And that sense of intellectual engagement and community is what makes every professor get up in the morning and say, I can't wait to get to work and see what my colleagues are doing. I want to recognize the students. That is why we're here. And we're not a think tank. We are a college university. We take kids at age 18 and we grow them for those 4 years, sometimes five, into these future leaders. We educate doctors, ministers, lawyers, maybe too many, but we have such a noble mission to educate the future leaders of America, and I would say increasingly the world. This is a very complex, big institution. It has a budget that approaches $3 billion. But the students are not customers. They are not clients. They are the future, not just of Vanderbilt, but of our society. What we thought incomprehensible when we were young is now comprehensible. What will that future be? These students will define that future. Vanderbilt is a special place because of the students, that sense of community, that sense of civility. That is what brings our students here and the interaction among them. And importantly, the friendship. College and education is about friendship. And that community here is extraordinary. I will always look to the students for leadership. I will always advocate for them. But I will always challenge them. For our mission goes back for 135 years. And it says, we have an obligation to the highest values of equality, compassion, and excellence in all endeavors. And of course, if you come down to our campus, you'll see we never forget to have a little bit of fun as well with the students on our campus. Now to our alumni, 125,000 strong on every continent. And so that means there are some alumni in Antarctica right now. We actually have a Professor Molly Miller who does spend time down there and takes our students there. The alumni own this university, and the students are simply future alumni. What we stand for as a university is, of course, wonderful when you see a 19-year-old make a discovery in a lab, your own child get an A on a chemistry test, but what really defines the university is not what the student does here, but when the alumni go out and make a mark on the world. And our distinguished alumni represent Vanderbilt in incredible ways and nourish us every day and really raise our aspirations for the future. They also make possible this university, the friends and alumni of Vanderbilt. And as I say, this started as a tiny little experiment in Nashville and grew into this incredible place. The pure generosity, the commitment to mission that the friends of the alumni have shown for over 100 years allowed this to be truly one of the greatest institutions in the world. Our staff on this university make this university a special place. When a student comes out of an organic chemistry test and says, well, I'm going to walk up and get something at RAND, and the staff up there are saying, how are you today? How's your day going? How do you like Vanderbilt? As we sit here on spring break, there is no spring break for many people, just simply the people that made this event possible. The staff over in the medical center, if there has to be a heart transplant, if there is a child in the emergency room, people are so committed every day to this institution. It never goes on vacation. It is a perpetual motion machine. It is an eternal flame. And that's largely because our incredible staff. Now let me say something about my very good friends and neighbors in Nashville. And I say friends and neighbors in Nashville because we've lived in the same house for 19 years and we do have wonderful neighbors. But Lydia and I have fallen in love with Nashville. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, good, great Midwestern town. Lydia's from Springfield, Illinois, which I tell her everything south of Chicago is the South. And we came to Nashville 21 years ago and discovered an extraordinary diversity of cultures, of people. Much like Vanderbilt, the commitment to be the greatest and to really say, we are going to be a special world city. And that's what Nashville really is. And we love living here. And my commitment as the new chancellor and my belief is that Vanderbilt must be part of the community because we are a citizen of Nashville. As Nashville thrives, we thrive. As Vanderbilt thrives, Nashville thrives. But I love this community and we consider it very much our home. We've sunk roots here. Through the years, I've had favorite coffee houses. I have my favorite places to get a sandwich. I raised our boys here. It is one of the most beautiful parts of the country. And when people come to Nashville, like we did 21 years ago, they say, what a jewel. What a cultural mecca. And that's why Vanderbilt is thriving. So Nashville and Vanderbilt are tied together, and I think that will only increase in importance in the future. So, Madam Chairman, my friends and colleagues here, I'm excited about this opportunity to be your chancellor. The only thing I have a regret about is to drop the interim part because I developed this wonderful iChancellor name. And I was going to trademark it, along with the iPod and the iPhone. But I am truly honored. And I had a feeling something good was going to happen this week, and this is the second best thing that happened, because beating University of Tennessee the other night was really the most important thing. I'm just happy that I still have my voice after that spectacular victory and screaming to victory. So thank you very much. I am very honored, and I hold this position in the highest regard, and I promise I will work hard. Thank you very much. You know, my view has always been you go to work and work very, very hard to make the best of a great institution. And I think probably the opportunity to be chancellor struck me the other night when Martha Ingram called me up and said, well, we think we'd like you to be the chancellor. And I find that in life, one seizes opportunities, but one has to be devoted to a great institution no matter what. And I tell people I came as an assistant professor, I worked hard, and I was honored to be there, and that continues to this day. And I miss teaching the most. Yeah. My first priority, I would say that there are two or three things that are key to the university at this point in its history. I think the first thing is, and we're making tremendous progress in this area, but I think continue to be a leader in healthcare and healthcare policy, to make a significant contribution locally, regionally, but really taking on the national and international issues in healthcare and healthcare policy. I think that's that is an obligation Vanderbilt has, not simply an opportunity. Healthcare for all and addressing diseases that plague so many people is absolutely a critical priority. And I think Vanderbilt's been a leader, but I think the challenges are still there and we need to meet them. The second thing is, I think access to these great institutions is the American dream. The rejuvenation of society with the kid who comes on scholarship and having that opportunity to say, I can go to a Vanderbilt. I may need some help. I'm from Brownsville, Tennessee, and I may need a little bit of help to come, but I worked hard. I've got good values. Providing the funds for access to Vanderbilt is absolutely a critical, critical priority for us. And we are working hard on that as we meet with our Board of Trust. I think another thing is just contributing significantly to our local community, making sure that Vanderbilt and its chancellor are always working with local leadership in the business community and the political community to make our city the very best it can be. I think those are the three things that if you drive past 230 Lauderdale Road and you see the light on late, those would be the things I'm working on. Yes.
I was wondering, you've witnessed a lot of change. MOCAP's National Approach, you've seen a lot of change here in 21 years. What do you think are the greatest changes in the environment or culture of Vanderbilt, and what challenges do you think lie ahead in that context?
Yeah. Well, let me, you know, it's a hard thing for me to answer, and I sometimes, you know, where I always say to people, when did your baby not look like a baby? When did your child look like an adult? Because the change is so gradual. And so when you see something every day and you love something so much, you never say, oh my God, it's so different. So I've been coming to this place for 21 years. And the thing I love about it is still the Vanderbilt I came to in its core values of learning, discovery, a commitment to great teaching, a sense of engagement, a sense of can-do. But having said that, I think the big changes are really the changes that affect America and the world. You know, the diversity in every respect, socioeconomically, racially, religiously, as America changes, these great universities change with them. So I think the other thing has been really our ability to bring the university together in one, to have people in the biology department working with people in the history department, people in the history department working with people in the psychiatry department, really building. University means one, but we have done that, and that's been a very significant change. I would say the third thing, and I'm not as long at it as some of my friends, but the dramatic improvement in athletics is a very, very important and significant achievement at Vanderbilt. And of course, I have my good friend David Williams here to credit for that. So I would say I wasn't here for the Gator Bowl team. I wasn't here for the Hall of Fame team, Hall of Fame Bowl, but I've been through some tough times. And I think the improvement in the sports is absolutely stunning and a real achievement to see the academics of this place continue to rise, always remaining Vanderbilt, and then to see ESPN on Tuesday night, and I don't know how many people were watching, but to see one of the greatest universities in the world, you know, play a great basketball game with kids who are great kids and smart kids and going to graduate. Yes? Yeah. Well, you know, I think the universities are very, very organic and evolving in every way. I don't see any kind of sharp turns in directions, but the impulse for change and the impulse for a new direction typically comes from the key people, the faculty and the students. What are they thinking about is important? What do they see when they go out into the world? What do they think they want to do to make this a better world? What do the faculty see as the pivotal problems in the world? And so, for example, this year we have started a number of initiatives, one being in the environment. And it is the right thing to do, and our students have said to us, we are going to go out into a world that is very complex, that requires us to understand economics, sociology, engineering, geology. So that's an area where I think you'll see significant investment at Vanderbilt. I mentioned healthcare before. You will see even more significant investment and commitment by Vanderbilt in the area of healthcare, in the basic sciences, but also addressing the disparities in healthcare that one can find right in this region, outside this door. And so investing in the basic science, the applied science, but also social sciences, economics, sociology, psychology, social psychology. Those are really at the root of some of the challenges we face. The final area, and it's not a sharp shift in direction, you can walk down the hill and see one of the greatest divinity schools in the world, but focusing on religion in the world, not in a trendy sense or in a topical sense, but the importance of religion and world religions in contributing to our culture, in maybe defining us as human beings rather than as different groups. So that is another area you will see that we feel a calling to, that those are areas that we really think we can make a difference, and our faculty want to make a difference, and the students want to make a difference. So I think those are three areas where you will see substantial investment. Financial aid, I think, is, as I mentioned before, and we're never at a loss to build a building once in a while. Any other?
How public of a chancellor do you intend to be?
Well, I go out and get my newspaper every morning, so you can. I will be very active and visible in the community, and I already am, and I very much enjoy that. And whether it's walking around our campuses, the community, I always see Vanderbilt as a set of very, very important concentric circles. And there's this thing called the Vanderbilt campus. And then you just build out a little bit. And the chancellor must be a visible, important contributor in every one of those circles throughout Tennessee, throughout Middle Tennessee. So I see myself very much as a representative of Vanderbilt, as a passionate advocate for the American dream, a passionate advocate for higher education, not just at Vanderbilt, for America, for its spiritual and economic well-being. So I expect to be a visible public contributor in areas that I care deeply about. You asked me before, why did I veer into this? It's because I believe these institutions can really change people's lives and make this world a far better world.
Sorry, and I apologize if I missed part of your response to this question. You had addressed about the changes that you've seen, but the part about the biggest challenge again?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mel. I would say the biggest challenges And you know, you have to realize I'm not new to this in the sense that there's a provost office down there that I sat in for 7 years. I've been here for 21 years. I would say the biggest challenges that I tend to worry about with our great institutions, and Vanderbilt, of course, is one of the greatest in my heart, is the external environment in which we operate. What happens in Washington on health care? What happens with regulation? What happens with globalization? The forces that affect the political, economic, regulatory forces that affect our university are invisible, hopefully, to everybody, because they're here to learn, discover, teach, to be treated, to be cured, to hold the joy of the new baby. But the challenges of the external environment are really something that the university leadership across the country has to take on. Science technology funding, basic global competitiveness linked to national security. Those are huge challenges that, and Vanderbilt must accept those challenges. But I think those are the sorts of things that are very much challenges for Vanderbilt and other great universities. Yes?
You play a pretty key role in fundraising as provost. Do you plan to continue that role as chancellor, or will your successor as provost play a role?
Yeah. I think it'll probably increase, but let me just say a little bit about fundraising. And I always like to use the word philanthropy, because you can fundraise for a lot of things. You can fundraise for a hedge fund. You can fundraise for a private equity fund. It's really philanthropy, which the two roots, I'm Greek, so I will show a little bit of my background here. Philos is love, anthro is humanity. Who are the people who love humanity? And we're a university that has the mission to serve humanity. And so what philanthropy is about in this great university, the classrooms, the chaired professorships, the great things that happen, they come about because people say, I have been blessed to have resources, and I have been content with what I have. I would like to make a difference in the world before I leave. And so that is a wonderful, wonderful, trusting role to play, to go to talk to somebody and say, they say, well, I want to cure cancer, or I want to have kids understand the importance of the Middle East in history. I want to find a way for Islam and the other great Middle Eastern religions to come together. That's a dream. That's not fundraising. So I expect to be active. I love this institution. I think we do incredible things. And I think people want to say, can I help? I always remind people, I'm a lawyer at heart, and there's a rule. I've got a friend here who's a lawyer. David's a lawyer. There's something called the rule against perpetuities, which is you can't give away your money forever. You can't control your wealth forever. The one exception is a charity. You can give a gift to a charity forever. And we still have accounts from the original Commodore. He's long gone. But just think of what he started and what he did. And just think, when somebody says, I'll send this child through on a scholarship, what happens then? Forever. Forever. So yes, I'm passionate about it, and I enjoy it. And I don't mind getting a door slammed in my face. Any?
You mentioned athletics. You mentioned the game last week.
Yeah.
How big of a role will you play in athletics? Do you plan on keeping the current?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I've got David Williams here, and he's the best in the country. And so it's working well. We really have a student-athlete experience. We took our trustees over the other day to spend time with the students who are athletes. And they said, what incredible kids. And you know, you have to realize that they kind of idolize when AJ goes up to block a shot or Shane Foster hits a three-pointer. These are great kids. And the student experience here as an athlete is unparalleled, I believe. Study abroad, being in fraternities and sororities, service in the community. How do I go to medical school? How do I go to law school? You want to play pro? That's great. I'm so proud of David Price, Jay Cutler, Brant Snedeker. I even give him golf tips. Yeah. But who else can do that? Who else can have somebody win a professional golf tournament, have the first round pick in baseball, who still, you know, wants to take classes so he can get that degree after signing, I don't know, a $10 million contract, starting for the Broncos, and then coming back to watch the games, giving back to philanthropy? It's incredible. So no, there will be no changes. We'll win more, of course. My biggest blow to my candidacy this year was when we didn't go to a bowl game. You know, I thought that would be it for me. I'd have to resign. So athletics is very, very important. You know, what involvement I have to tell you, I love sports, but I grew up where you really had to be a loyal fan. So I grew up in Milwaukee. I used to watch the old Braves games. I kind of like the Cubs too, and liking the Cubs. I mean, people in Boston say, oh, look at the Red Sox, they're the heartbreak story. They win World Series, the Cubs don't win. So I've always been a really loyal fan, and there's something called a fair weather fan, which means, you know, you cheer when the team wins, you go over and say to the coach, great, you're the great coach. I like to go see them after they lose. You know, I remember Bobby, they'd lose a football game, I'd go see them, break down the film on Monday. You know, just not to help them. Of course, I will call plays. I mean, I love sports. But you know, I'm there to support them. And it doesn't matter if it's a coach, a student, a professor, writing a book, curing a disease. My job is to empower people to have their dreams. That's how I view the chancellor. Because someone has empowered us, starting with the bishop and the commodore, to empower people to have this great institution. So the last thing I need to do is be saying to Bobby, I remember one time we were watching film, and I said, Bobby, look at that play. No one was out there blocking that. And he said, that's a BYOB play. And I said, what's that? He said, bring your own block. He said, the runner, no blocks missed. So, but you know, I don't see it as my job. I have to support them, empower them, be the best they can be, and they're doing it. But that's my role with anybody. You know, I don't go to the chemistry department and say, you know, you got to tilt a little bit more to the inorganic, you know, or, you know, psychology, you're too tilted toward neuroscience. My role is to create the environment for people's dreams and allow them to realize them. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.